Ben Vereen, one of the greatest entertainers of our time. Wow. He has been a household name famous since the 1970s, almost 50 years. Aren't many people around like that. He's an extraordinary man and has such a joie de vivre, I think is the appropriate term. He is very charismatic on screen, off screen, on stage, off stage, gifted dancer, actor, and all around great guy. We talked to him about his life, about the challenges of acting and dancing on stage, and some of the questions I've always wanted to answer for myself that I have never really been able to get answered. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Ben Vereen. Before we get to our next guest, Ben Vereen, I got to tell you about something that really annoys the heck out of me, and that's being ripped off. And now that the world is opening up again, I thought I'd get my passport renewed. But please do not do what I did. I Googled passport renewal services. A bunch of companies came up, and I'm seeing prices like $150, $200, even $280, not including passport photos or the government fee. What you're really paying for is the thousands of dollars these companies are paying to appear first on your Google search. What you have to do is go directly to the App Store and download the It's Easy app. With It's Easy, you get exceptional five-star passport renewal service for under $35. That's more like it, right? Under 35 bucks. It's passport renewal the smart way. When I downloaded the It's Easy app, I found that it was totally easy. You just fill out the application, take your complimentary passport photo with your own phone. I'll repeat that because it is awesome. You just fill out the application and take your complimentary passport photo with your own cell phone. You don't have to go to the pharmacy or the passport photo place. You just take the photo on your phone, then print out the application. That It's Easy immediately emails you with a trackable shipping label. That's also included. And then all you have to do is print it out and send it in with your most recent passport. And that's it. Voila. It is so easy, so affordable, under 35 bucks, not the hundreds of dollars other companies are trying to milk from you so they can cover their huge Google advertising fees. If you visit the It's Easy website at itseasy.com, itseasy.com, you'll see that It's Easy has been in business for 40 years, so you figure you're getting 40 years of value. It's a five-star company that you can 100% trust with your documents. So if you have to get a passport, I'm telling you, there is no other way. It's easy. Don't be fooled. Don't line the pockets of Google. When you need your passport renewed, and you probably do, and by the way, if you go to the airport and your passport expires in 6 months and you're planning on being back in a month, they might not let you get back on the plane. They get very finicky about that stuff. So please, think It's Easy. Just spell it out, I-T-S-E-A-S-Y, It's Easy. Download the app from the Apple or Android App Store today. Do yourself a favor and your wallet a favor. And now my conversation with Ben Vereen. Ben, the first thing that I'm really curious about is the physicality. I've seen Pippin. I saw a special television presentation of it. I think your first love is the stage. You're obviously amazing at it, but I'm wondering, it looks like it's exhausting work. I don't think I've ever seen, I can't imagine anything being quite that hard, or am I wrong?
Well, you know, it depends on how much you want to put into it, invest in it. If it becomes a passion, the work is part of the journey, and you can't get enough of it. It is that thing that ignites you. You need to get out on that stage and finally have the product done and people receive it. That's a beautiful journey. It's not hard work for us. At least not for me. It's fun.
Well, it looks like you're having fun.
I am having fun.
Well, what about the relentlessness of the schedule?
Someone said, you know, what would you like to do next as an employment?
That is that's fabulous. And the intensity, what is it, 8 performances a week sometimes?
Yes.
I was wondering, though, like, you've mastered it, and I guess every performance is a little bit different. I've heard that every audience is a little bit different.
It is. Every show is different. I teach a thing called Pathway to Excellence, subtitle, the excellence that you're seeking is seeking you. And what I try and tell my young people that come to and to my classes, that do not expect any show to be the same. Although the material is the same, the songs are the same, you have the same lines, each show is an opening night. Why? Because someone in the audience has not seen the show ever before. And maybe it's their first time, you know, coming to Broadway or coming to a theater. Our job is to turn them on.
Have you noticed a difference in audiences, say, over the past 5 years or 10 years? I just very quickly, I saw The Iceman Cometh. I don't go to Broadway all that often, but not as often as I should. And you know what? We need it so bad. Do you know Broadway makes more money for New York City than the Mets and Yankees and the football teams combined? You probably know that.
Right?
It is.
Wow.
Because people basically don't, come from out of town to see a baseball game. And so it dwarfs sports as an engine, economic engine. But so I saw this incredibly complex play. It was breathtaking. It was moving. Denzel Washington was in it. And the complexity of it really, but after it was done, the audience, and it must have been, maybe it was an off afternoon or whatever, but they were in such a hurry to get on their phones. And there was something about it that I thought, gosh, and you know what? Even I listened to people on the way out of the theater, and you know, they were on to the next thing. They were talking about what's next. They weren't talking about the incredible performance and spectacle we just saw. And I'm just wondering, was this just a weird thing that I experienced, or is that a trend as far as you know?
That is the circle that you were in at that time. People are different. Some people come see a show, they're so struck by it, they have to get on the phone to talk about it. Some don't talk about it, move on to the next thing, you know? So it depends.
How do you feel about right now? It seems like there's more opportunity for content makers than ever before. I mean, the past 50 years, there were only so many TV stations, there were only so many movie companies, and now there's been an explosion of everything. Is this like a revolutionary moment that we've got so many more outlets?
More work for everybody. More work for everybody. More work for everybody. Bring it on. Bring it on. Bring it on. Bring it on. It's an explosion which is welcomed. It's a matter of fact of keeping the talent and the quality of the art up. That's the challenge we have now. Not to get schlock out there, as they say, just anything thrown out there. It's keeping the quality of the art up high.
Ben,
if that answers your question.
No, it certainly does. And I think it's just a great moment to be in the arts. And the content, I mean, people are hooked on it.
Here's the thing, though. We got to get people more hooked on the arts, especially now during this pandemic. What we're seeing right now is people are being isolated. They're being they're separated. And so in the separation comes a certain fear factor, and getting people back in the room to be in the same room together is going to be a challenge or an opportunity. But the art thing about the arts is, the art is the thing that's carrying us through. And we've got to recognize that. The arts is the thing that is carrying us through. It's that song. It's that rhythm. It's that poem. It's that thing that makes you feel good in the morning, makes you get out of bed and go zestful to life, to get on your computer. That's a creative art. So we got to embrace art for what it is. Life itself is art. And we separate it. So there's the performing arts, and there's art in the films, and art is life itself. And if we approach it that way, we'll keep a song in our hearts.
Beautiful, beautiful. Ben, where were you born?
I was born in Miami, Florida. I was raised in Brooklyn, New York.
What neighborhood in Brooklyn?
Bedford-Stuyvesant, Herkimer and Rochester. You know it?
I know my father was the commanding officer of the 88th Precinct.
And the 77th Precinct, which is my district.
So I remember in the 71st Precinct when I was in junior high. So I've been through there quite a bit. Where did you go?
I think he did do the 77th Precinct as well.
Yeah, I think he might have been the executive office. Oh, I know. That was a pretty rough precinct in terms of the cops.
Yes, it was.
Well, the cops were no prized people.
No, and I tell a story because my mother was highly respected in the neighborhood. He didn't mess with Pauline Varee. And even the officers in the neighborhood respected my mother.
What was she like? What did she do?
Oh, she worked as a maid and she worked in the Lois King Theater, cleaned up after everyone goes home, that sort of thing. And she was a maintenance person.
And your dad?
But she had my dad worked at a paint factory. So they were not, you know, showbiz people. But mom had a dream. You know, someone came along and said, you know, can kid dance? And she said, yeah, he dances around the house all the time. He should be in dance school, da-da-da-da-da. She said, take him. You know, a woman came along and said, you know, this kid, your kid, he should be in church. He said, take him. And that's how I got my start, going to churches and going to dance schools and singing for people in the hospital. That's how I got started.
Do you remember, though, the person who approached your mom about, hey, can he dance? And she said, of course, he's dancing all like.
Yeah, he was from Star Time Dance Studio. His name, I do not know. But I can see him today walking down Fulton Street.
And were you, and this was your mom, you were precocious? You were really into it at home?
That was, you know, and like every kid, you know, they hear music, they move around, they dance, that sort of thing. That's all I was doing. I wasn't into ballet. I didn't get into ballet until I got in high school.
At what high school was it?
The High School of Performing Arts.
Oh, that's the famous high school,
46th
right?
Street, that's right.
So before high school, do you remember when you said, you know what, I hear people make money at this. This is something I want to do forever. Do you remember when that occurred to you?
When did that occur to me? I think it's still occurring to me. let me see. Oh, yes, I do remember. I did a dance for a church's auxiliary fashion show. And they paid me $5. And I was shocked. I said, wow, you get paid for this? Wow. Okay, I'm in.
That's really great. How old are you about?
I was about 13.
And by the way, getting into the High School of Performing Arts, there's an audition required.
Oh, yes. It was very strict. Very strict. In those days, you see, I didn't know. Coming across the bridge was like, I thought I needed a passport because I'd never left Brooklyn. You live in Brooklyn, you stay in Brooklyn. They say Manhattan, that's like saying Europe. So I had to go to Manhattan, and I'll never forget that audition. So I get upstairs to the dance studio, and I see dancers for the first time in tights and leotards, and the guys in their tights and T-shirts, and I'm in my Bermuda shorts and high kid, my U.S. kid sneakers and my derby hat, and I'm going, wow, what's going on here? And sitting behind the table were prominent, you know, figures like Martha Graham was there, George Balanchine was there, Jerome Robbins. I mean, some very heavy. I didn't know who they were. To me, they were just a bunch of white people. I got up on, I did my little dance, and I did a very bad audition, but they needed boys that year. And a woman named Dr. Rachel Yoakum saw my audition. She asked me, would I like to go to the school? And I sort of said, yeah, but I wasn't really interested. I was more interested in running the streets. And so she made it possible for me to go to High School of Performing Arts.
Beautiful. And that, how long was that commute, by the way, from Brooklyn? That's a significant commute.
About 30 minutes.
Oh, that's
train,
it? All right.
Yeah.
High school is...
Take the A train. Do that.
I take the E train myself, but the A train goes by me every day, or sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah,
depends
yeah.
what time I get on at 23rd Street. So let me ask you this. What's high school like for you? Is it just a blast? Is it like, oh my God, I could not imagine having this much fun, or is it just school?
I didn't know what I was getting into. You know, people often ask me, say, well, when did you decide to do the dance and stuff like that? And I said, well, actually, it chose me. I didn't choose it. I was just a kid in Brooklyn, singing in churches, hanging out with the guys on the corner. You know, that was my life. And there I was thrown in, and I was going to military school. I wanted to go to high school to aviation. Remember aviation?
Sure, by LaGuardia Airport.
Right. That's why I wanted to go to school, to high school. But my principal said, no, you should go try out for the High School Performing Arts. I made the cut, and I got there the first day, and I was shocked because I had never seen anything like this. I'd never seen people like this. I mean, everyone was dressed to the nines, and And I was had on my little suit I wore, you know, with my quartet, and got into the dress room, got undressed, put on my dance clothes, and my world changed.
And did you, like, I would imagine it was pretty
It
apparent.
was diff it was difficult. It was difficult.
It was.
For me, it was difficult because I didn't have a dancer's body. And all the other kids looked like they were slamming. They were good. I just couldn't get it. And a guy named Tony Catanzaro, who later became very famous for the Florida Ballet Company, he would stay after school. He was in Norman Walker's dance company, and we became friends. And he would stay after school with me to teach me how to do the modern dance. He'd work with me. To my senior year, by luck, there was a demonstration of what the modern the dance spot was all about. Beginning modern dance, intermediate and advanced. And I was in the beginners. And what happened was one day one of the kids missed the rehearsal. He was out. Another kid, there was three boys, and he claimed he was sick. He was out of it, and there was only one boy left, and I got to dance with the advanced group. So performing arts was really a training ground that was wonderful for me.
It was hard. It was difficult as well. And
Oh, it was very difficult, very difficult.
did they start? Did you realize, like, okay, or was it all hard work? Or did they say, you know what, you've got something special in addition to this craft you're trying to master? You've got a charisma. There's a spark in your eye. There's something about you that's even that star quality. I'm just curious because I mean, it seems obvious now, and certainly throughout your career, did anybody notice that or say anything like that early on?
I don't. I think Dr. Rachel Yoakum noticed that because I was not a good student, and I couldn't keep up with the rest of the kids. I just sort of like fondled my way through, but Dr. Yoakum kept pushing me and kept pushing me because he saw something. And it was years later when I began to make it. Matter of fact, I was on the Dinah Shore show, and here from the background on backstage, I hear, "You better sit up out there, or I'm going to come out and sit on your back." And that's what Gertrude Sher would say when I was bouncing over in class. And I turned, and there was Rachel Yoakum and Gertrude Sher walking out on stage.
It was like a "This is your life" moment. Beautiful.
Yeah, like this is your life moment. It was wonderful, because I didn't know in high school. I didn't know whether I wanted to go in this direction or not, but it kept pulling me. It kept pulling me, and I'm grateful it did, and it has, and it still is.
things started happening right after. My understanding is after high school, you know, your career really started to, if not take off, you were getting really great opportunities even in your late teens.
What happened was a lady named Vinette Carroll, fabulous black director. She was doing a show called The Prodigal Son, written by a man named Langston Hughes. And at my high school production, after graduation, she said, "I'd like for you to do this show." And that was my first show I ever did. It was at the Greenwich Views Theater off Broadway, a little theater under a church. And that's where I met Langston Hughes. We
Wow.
became good friends.
You were friend. Well, that's wow, what a legend. But the two of you, I
Yes.
mean,
Yes.
so now this part of your career, and then just taking a step back, what separates somebody from who makes it and somebody who doesn't? You know, there are a lot of people who have dreams of Hollywood and that kind of thing and stage.
I can't answer that. I can't answer that. Some call it luck, some call it hard work. I see people doing very hard work and they have not yet made it. I don't know what that image that is. I just know that when you're blessed, you're blessed. And the idea is to keep working, even though you don't make your goal. You keep working towards your goal. A lot of people give up. They go, "Well, you know, I didn't go." No, you don't give up. You keep pressing towards the high ground, and one day the high ground will find you. It may not be the way you want it to be, but it'll be the high ground. I tell people, I say, especially my class, I say, you know, you study all your life, and then one day you get out and say, "Well, I'm going to be a big star." And someone says, "Well, you know what? I need you to go be a waiter at the at a restaurant on 33rd and 3rd." You say, "Whoa, wait a minute. I've studied high school performing arts. I'm a fabulous performer. I'm not going to go wait on tables. Says, go wait on a table at 33rd and 3rd. And so you put your ego aside, and one day you say, all right, I'll go. And you go down, and you become a waiter. And while you're doing your job, someone's sitting there, you're serving coffee to you, and say, do you dance? Do you sing? You got a great face. I'd like for you to come audition for me. Had you not been there, that opportunity never would have happened. So you never know in life where it's going to hit. I say be open and receptive to all the possibilities that life has to offer you.
You grew up in the church. You performed early on in the church. Are you, and I read that you're an ordained minister, throughout all of this, throughout your life, was faith a big part of your life or not so much? Or how would you?
Spirituality is the source of my life in all life. Whenever I feel down, that's the place where I go within. And I pray within. I meditate within. I serve. And that serving is getting me out of my own stuff by serving. Like serving other people gets me out of my stuff, what I'm hung up in.
It certainly, I know what you're talking about big time. Yeah. By the way, was that you who had to go to 33rd and 3rd? It sounded like you were talking about somebody else. Did you ever have to take, separate side jobs?
Should we do a job? Yes, I did. Of course I did.
What kind of jobs?
My first job, I worked as in a textile factory in the garment district, hauling textiles from place to place. Yeah.
And
I worked as a male boy or male man in a United Artists building. I was the male person delivering mail to all the floors, and I'd sing as I went along because I knew that was United Artists. I said, maybe I'll be discovered. So I'd sing when I'd deliver the mail. I've got mail for you.
Where was the moment? I mean, look, growing up, Ben Vereen, still, it's household name, famous, status, iconic. There must have been a switch. Early on where it's like, okay, everything from this point is different. Everything could potentially be different forever because.
I don't know. I'm not the type of person who I cling to life. And I guess when it happened for me was I remember getting my Tony, being nominated, and I didn't know who Tony was. And I went to the award show and I was blown away by all the attention of people saying, oh, you were so sorry you didn't win a Tony for Jesus Christ Superstar. And so I said, you don't understand. You've invited me to the party. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for inviting me to the party. Next year, Bob Fosse, I walked away with a Tony. And I think that's when things changed for me. Opportunities begin to open. The doors begin to open. I remember going to Central Park with my wife at the time. And right after the Tonys, and us looking at Central Park and looking at the city, and me saying, the city is mine.
Ah.
The city is mine, darling. Let's go get it. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing. So where we are right now today, I want to run this by you, and I'll be apologetic ahead of time if I say the wrong thing, because I want to talk about race for a couple of minutes, if it's okay. Because
it's so funny. You know what's so interesting is that we're in a place right now in our lives where you got to say, okay, I'm going to say something that may offend you, or I'm going to say something about race. Is it okay?
Well, trust me. Can I tell you something, Ben?
I know where you're coming from.
Everyone's tiptoeing
it's
around.
It's sad. That's true.
I think it is, but I also think, you know what, respectfully, I really give myself a way out because, anyway, let me, where I'm coming from is this. Number one, in my view, you have always transcended race. Ben Vereen, I mean, the name is just, you were, no one thought of you as anything other than Ben Vereen. I have a feeling it might be different for you, but I want to tell you about a movie I saw last night and then tie it back to this. I saw When Harry Met Sally, which I saw when it came out in 1989 or whatever. And I noticed, first of all, It's a much darker movie by today's standards than it was when we saw it. It's just, it doesn't work anymore. The Billy Crystal comes off almost like a creep. And and there are maybe three black people in the entire movie, and they're all waitresses. And the camera stops and pauses, and, you know, this is a waitress, you know what I mean? And she says something, and it is... So I guess my question is this. Did you ever feel limited by being black? And if you did not, I would imagine that maybe many of your peers did, but I don't know.
That conversation, you know, it's a part of the journey. I made up my mind a long time ago that there are no small parts, and to how can I put this? What didn't work for me, I didn't do. And what worked for me, I did. I never let color stand in my way. If that was meant for me, I it would be mine. If not, there's something else greater coming down the pike. But I wouldn't let color stand in my way. And I know there's a lot today going on. It's a lot of productions and that sort of things of nature. But yet and still, we still have to come up to the bar as far as owning our own equalization across the board for everybody. That includes my Asian brothers and sisters. That includes my Indian American Indian brothers and sisters. You know, we all got to come to an equal line. We can't forget each other, anybody on this ship. We can't leave. No soul goes left behind. No soul left behind. And that's you know, I serve a universal God of all nationalities, all religions, all forms. The God I serve has no prejudice, doesn't know anything about it, only gives love. Gives me a dash at the beginning of my life and comes to get me at the end. And during that dash, it's up to me to create the wonders that I've been sitting here and you've been sitting here to create, to make this life a better place, this world a better place. Unfortunately, we have those who do not see it that way, and they're selfish and they're greedy, and you know, we have poverty, we have homelessness, we have all these issues. But the issues will go away if we attach ourselves to love. During this whole period of time of the pandemic, it was very hard to hear somebody say, remember love and serve one another. And that's why I've approached my life that way. And I don't understand. That's their problem. That's their problem. My problem, live life to the fullest and enjoy it.
Very beautiful. You know, there's not one photograph where you're not smiling.
No. You realize? Life is good. Oh, there's a few.
So just one more thing on this, and you're speaking so beautifully and powerfully, and I'm getting back to the hang-ups that a lot of us have and society has, and they tiptoe around. So I'm going to ask you another thing about this. Like, my sense, and I could be totally wrong, or what I've heard is that some of the productions, and it's fantastic that we're having more productions from Netflix to Amazon and whatever, but the initial conversation that's had in the creative process is, how do we make this, you know, how do we make this as diverse as possible? Whereas there's so much focus on the exterior and not enough about character development, about who's on the inside. Now, I am a total outsider to the entertainment industry. I've heard bits and pieces about this. I don't know. I certainly, you know, Joe Biden said the other day that, you know, he's seeing a lot more diversity in the TV commercials he sees. Can a focus on, you may not, you're focusing on love and you're focusing on providing, and I know you have multi-focuses, and you're but there are people who are obsessed with the exterior, and maybe it's more important. Maybe it's too easy for me to say exterior. Have you noticed that? Is that a bad thing? Is it a good thing?
Well, for those who notice it, it is for them, whatever it is. I don't get hung up there. Yes, we're grateful there's more diversity. It's about time we got there, but let us not forget everybody. Not only do we have Black Lives Matter, but what about Asian lives matter? What about Indian lives matter? What about people's lives matter? When we get that place, let's get to that place. You know, diversity is wonderful. I think it's great, but let's be inclusive is what I'm getting at. Let's be inclusive for everybody. I remember one time having a talk with Neil Simon. I said, Neil, write me a play. And I write for Jewish people. I said, I can be Jewish.
Did he write one for you?
No, he didn't.
Wow. That's a great conversation, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
So
we should mix it. We got to mix it up. So you know how to mix it up. I love when Morgan Freeman said to an interview, he says, how are we going to do about this race thing? He said, I'll tell you what, you stop calling me black, I'll stop calling you white. Let's get on living life.
I love it. And of course, I think they try to cancel him for that, but you can't cancel Morgan Freeman. You can't cancel. I mean, so by the way, one thing I've always been curious with the performer's life, and people know you, you're instantly recognizable, performer of your level. Is that ever, does it ever get tedious in public where people want a picture, people want to acknowledge, or they see your credit card and they Ben Vereen and they flip out? Is that always a joy? It can't be, I'm guessing.
That's why we're came this way. Those are the people that made us who we are. You do what you do, what you have to do. And if it gets too much, you move away. But you do not neglect your audiences. These are the people that made you who you are. If it gets into a crowd where a bunch of people are coming at you, you just find a way to move yourself away from the crowd. But you do not neglect your audiences. If there was an audience, it would not be you.
A couple more quick things. I want to respect your time here. You've been here for a half hour. I so appreciate it. But would you say, you mentioned in high school about all these giants who really helped you. Later in your career, when you become Ben Vereen and Ben Vereen famous, are you still getting coaching? Are you still learning?
Yes.
Can you still have a mentor?
Yes. Yes.
Who are some of
yes,
yours?
I still have a mentor. My friends who work out with me and work with me on scripts and things like that. A friend of mine, Phil Vogel, he works out with me. And, you know, some other people work out with me. And the people on the set, I work with them. Sure, you always continue to grow, continue to reach higher, always.
The lifestyle of a performer, I think, is a tough one because, you know, let's face it, there are times where you're not working in your primary profession or your profession of choosing, and then the schedule can be, I'm guessing, up and down. And a lot of performers, famous, not so famous, succumb to substance abuse, alcohol abuse. My theory is it's because of the schedule, which can be unpredictable. Or I could be wrong. Maybe it doesn't affect the performing arts more than any other
community. It depends on the individual. Depends on the party. But here's the thing. We talk about service. So when those times come, you get into service. Like I told you, like about Edward starting this, Ed Wilson starting this homeless project. You get involved in serving the people. You know, he's starting out with these channels where he's giving the voice to the voiceless. These are the things you get involved in. And that occupies your time. Yes, substance abuse is all around. I came from the 60s. Come on. If you survived the 60s, you got a life. Come on. I mean, the 60s was like out of control. But you survived it. When you survive it, you look back and go, how did I do that? You know, because there's something within you, a spirit within you that says, I am stronger than any substance that you can put in your body. Hear me, and I will carry you through.
Wow. All right. Hey, can you tell me a little bit about this? So how does this work, giving voice to the homeless? And what do you have? What does Ed have in mind here? How's it going to work?
Well, you should have Edward on the show and let him explain it to you. The idea is we're going to always have homelessness with us. It's been with us since civilization. As long as man has a greed in his mind, there will be homelessness. And then we got the homeless people who are in the homeless community who are taking advantage and taking away from those who are really in need. What we got to do is separate the wolves from the sheep. And that's going to take some time. So by having a voice, which Edward, thank God, is helping us do. We'll get an opportunity to let people what to tell people what to do, how to do it, and when to do it, and what to look out for. And we'll hear the voices of those people who are homeless telling you their stories. So, you know, my godmother had a thing. She says, I don't want to give a hand out. I want to give people a hand up. I'm a strong believer in that. A hand up. What can we do? I worked with a group here in New York called Care for the Homeless. The reason why? Because they provide medical care for the homeless. Yeah, some of them get better medical care than I get. But it's there for them. And what that does, it gives them a hand up back into society. Because they don't want, I can't believe that somebody wants to be homeless. I ran to people who said, no, this is my life, I'm going to be here. I ran to those people. I've had conversations with them because they feel that they're so rejected. And society is so messed up that they don't want to deal with it anymore. So they choose to be homeless. And so those are the ones we've got to embrace, put our arms around, let them know it's okay, because we're fixing what the mess up is all about. And it's up to you and I. You and I to be service to ourselves, to them, and to ourselves. Because when you service somebody else, you're servicing yourself, and you get out of your own stuff.
I love it. Can I tell you a quick question? I'll tell you a quick experience I had with the homeless.
Okay.
So I started serving the homeless at a soup kitchen.
Okay.
And I did it on Sunday nights. I was down in the dumps, and my mother said, you know, you really should volunteer more. And I was like, I was in the military. I don't have to, you know, I mean, I already did that. No. And so and every time there were too many volunteers. So I went to the guy who ran the kitchen. He said, you know what? I don't have any volunteers on Sunday night. You should come on a Sunday night. And I did, and I started serving, and I felt great. I just felt totally great. At the same time, I had this weird, small, ethical dilemma regarding an expense account. And it was like I bought somebody a tie, and I had a receipt for it, and I was going to put it in my clothing allowance. But technically, letter of the law, I don't think that's the right thing to do. So I kept putting it off. And then after I started volunteering, I saw this receipt. And I'm like, oh, how could I ever have questioned myself? Of course I'm volunteering for the homeless. And of course I'm going to file this thing. And then I stopped myself. It was just such an interesting moment where I realized, my gosh, you know, just because I'm doing this doesn't mean I can do that. And that was worth the entire experience. And I wound up going there for years longer. And I don't know why I share that, but I have the one more question on the homeless. You're right. They're always going to be with us. And it's kind of, it's heartbreaking in a way. Like, that's almost built into society. Jesus said, we're always going to have the poor. You won't have me, though.
But see, the word is poor. And there is, the sad thing is that there is enough for everyone on this planet. Everyone there is on this planet. That's where greed comes from. That's where crime comes from, is that wanting to get what they have, what I want, what they have. And once we take that out of the equation, then we'll have love is what they want that we have. But how do we do that? That's by working together and start dialoguing together on an understanding level, not on remove the ego out of the equation, ego edging God out.
You know? Ah, I heard that once before, and you're, gosh, that's beautiful.
Or either, or they would say, ego entering God's omnipresence, which the choice is yours.
Well, before I go, first of all, thank you to Ben Vereen. What a beautiful man, spirit. Before I go, I do want to remind you, if you want crazy and easy, cheap passport renewal, think it's easy. It's like the best way to have your passport ready to go as soon as the world opens up again. I used It's Easy and already have my passport back. It's totally awesome. Download the It's Easy app from the App Store today. ITSEASY, ITSEASY. Shall I try that again? It's Easy, ITSEASY. Many thanks. Talk soon.